The following Dharma discourse was given by Jeffrey Shugen Arnold. Shugen Roshi is the abbot of both the monastery and the Zen Center of New York City. This talk, like all of our talks, is offered free of charge. If you would like to make a donation or to find out more about our various programs, please visit us online at zmm.org. Thanks for listening.
Master Dogen taught, wrote a poem saying, drifting pitifully in the whirlwind of birth and death, as if wandering in a dream, in the midst of illusion, I awaken to the true path. There is one more matter I must not neglect, but I need not bother now. As I listen to the sound of the evening rain falling on the roof of my temple retreat in the deep grass of Fukakusa. Good evening, everyone, and good evening to all of you who are joining us. I understand there are quite a number of you who've joined us just for this evening. We are concluding tonight our Rahatsu Sesshin, which is our December session, which celebrates the enlightenment of the Buddha. Normally, it's begun on the December 1st and ends on December 8th, which is the day that we celebrate the Buddha's enlightenment. We begin on the 26th and conclude on New Year's Eve. And make up for the loss of days by sitting later and later into the evening. So we're gathering here at the end of this session, at the end of this year. And it's a time when we, by tradition and naturally, reflect on the year that has passed. For some, this year has not passed soon enough. And we reflect on our aspirations and intentions for the coming year. Buddhism teaches that all that we perceive in our mind, which is all that we perceive, is a dream. It comes and goes moment by moment. And so being in a dream, we should dream ourselves awake, create a living, liberating dream for this coming year. We sit here in this hall together, with all of you within the Buddha Dharma, within the three treasures. We're here to live within this Buddha mind that is naturally awake and to reflect on our lives, to consciously make intentions. The Buddha was enlightened to the profound, radical truth that intention is karma. Intention is action that has consequence. We practice to realize this mind and to manifest it as compassion. The past is a dream. The future is a wisp of a cloud, a breeze passing by. The three worlds are nothing but mind. What are we to do with this life? Our vow is to break the cycle of drifting pitifully in the wandering whirlwind of birth and death. When we make a vow within ourselves, it is a powerful thing. When a Sangha comes together and makes a vow, it is manyfold more powerful. When practitioners all around the world, when every concerned person, no matter what their tradition or lack of tradition is, makes a vow, that becomes a force that can't be measured. This is year that we're bidding farewell to has been a year of great suffering, profound suffering and loss. It's also been a year of great possibility, of change. And so we might wonder, are we in the midst of a world, a people, a civilization that is destroying itself and the world with it? Or are we experiencing the tremors of a great awakening that is coming to the truth that there is actually only one people, one world, one purpose? What makes the difference? As we enter into this new year in this crowded world of ours. In fact, ordinarily tonight, we would be quite crowded in here, cheek by jowl, which is specifically why we're not crowded, breathing each other's air in abundance. How do we, because all of the suffering happens in relationship to within ourselves and with each other, how do we meet each other? How do we meet each other? Kensei Rinpoche said, when greeting an important person, offer some token of your respect. Bow to them, offer a gift, a place to sit, something to eat and drink. Dogen said, if you want to subtly communicate with someone, meet them in giving and generosity. Master Gosho said, when you meet a person of the way, don't meet with them with words or silence. In other words, don't meet them in dividedness, in duality. How will you meet them? Drifting in the whirlwind of birth and death as if wandering in a dream. In the midst of illusion, I awaken to the true path. I practice this, I commit to this, I make this my vow. I hope you do too. What does Fusatsu teach us about how to meet each other? Fusatsu is an ancient liturgy, practice of atonement, of meeting ourselves squarely so that we can meet each other broadly. We begin by taking our place on our seat, standing on the ground that we cover, being unambivalent about taking our place, not seeking another one. We make an offering to the Buddha, to the altar, to dissolve our greed, our stinginess, to heal our isolation and our individualism, our cultural religion that creates the individual, that puts the individual above and apart from everything and everyone else. But we don't just offer incense, we offer all of the earth, all of the sky, all of the fire, all of the water, all of the elements, anything that we both might cling to and everything that is essential, we offer that. Kinsei says, offer a gift and a place to sit. That's a good place to begin. We make an offering in gratitude, recognizing how we have arrived here today. Not alone, not on our own. We recognize those peoples who inhabited this land for centuries, millennia, who were forced out. We recognize our familial blood lineage who gave us life and nurtured us along the way. We recognize our lineage of teachers, of enlightened beings who made it possible for the Buddha's wisdom to stay alive within the minds and bodies of people down to our time. And we also offer gratitude to the lineage of sanghas. You know, we don't often think of it that way. But, you know, a teacher without a sangha is not going to go very far, right? It's the teacher within the sangha within the teacher that allows this to be passed on. And so we all owe a debt of gratitude to the sanghas stretching all the way back to the Buddha. All of those people who were willing to put their butts on the line, simply, to make a commitment to their life, to say, this life matters. It's of great importance. And so far, it's not working out so well. But I have great faith that not only it can, but it should. To all the people before us who did not accept samsara as a necessary path, we bow, we make prostrations, dissolving our pride, our separation, and still more, our isolation. We do it within mindfulness. We bow in faith. We bow in gratitude. We bow in samadhi. We bow in merging. We bow in Buddha nature. In the early years, Dada Roshi used to say quite often, particularly during the introductory retreats, when he was introducing liturgy and prostrations, he said, we in the West need to learn how to bow. We need to learn how to bow. And he wasn't talking about just moving the body. We bow to the Buddha. We bow to Prajna Paramita, to Avalokiteshvara. They're not someone else. Which means we have to have the courage to do that, to face those great beings endowed with those great enlightened qualities. And in a sense, to see and be seen. That's why the images on the altars are brought to life when they're installed. Their eyes are opened. Then we practice atonement, the Gatha of Atonement, acknowledging our humanity. That's we meet in our humanity. We meet in our shared attachments and delusions and fears, our negative impulses, our unskillful actions and their consequences, our desires. We all have these. It's something we have in common. We share these qualities. And we atone, we practice atonement because we are not our actions. They belong to us, the Buddha said. But they are not you. And so we atone. We atone because the self is not fixed in time or place or in a behavior or in an action or in regrets. We atone because we can, because we can choose a path. We can seek a path. We atone because we can see different ways of moving forward and choose the better one, the one that is true. We atone because self-nature is essentially free of all constraints. And in a sense, when we are constrained, that's often when we act unskillfully. And so by atoning, we're also honoring the fact that we are fundamentally unconstrained, unconfined. We atone because we have the courage to face directly what is true and what is difficult to face. The fact that it is difficult to face actions that belong to us that have been hurtful is our compassion. If we didn't care, if it didn't matter, it wouldn't hurt. It hurts because we care, because of compassion. And so at the eve of this new year, it's an important time to atone, to reflect, and in the same vein, to forgive. To forgive. Is this a good time for forgiveness? If not, when? To give ourselves the gift of forgiving, which means to the gift of relinquishing our ability, we might say our right, to carry, to continue to carry things that have been done to us that were hurtful, and that we carry the wound of that, and we can do that, and we can continue doing that. Is that what we want to be doing? Is that what we need to be doing? Is that ultimately skillful? If it is time to forgive, what do we need to do to be able to forgive? Honestly. We chant the names of the Buddha, the enlightened ones, the historical beings that actually lived and breathed on this planet, and the non-historical beings, all of whom who live within our tradition and in our minds and practiced and awakened and embodied great virtues, great qualities that we aspire to. And in a sense, when we invoke those Buddhas and Bodhisattvas into our presence so that we can practice together, we can be inspired, we can be encouraged to aspire to such a great height. And in another sense, we invoke their names to hold ourselves accountable. If we are going to take vows, if we are going to take the Dharma seriously, and it's really the only way to meet the Dharma is with in seriousness. In other words, taking it seriously, believing it as true, which means to take our lives seriously. Ourselves, we could take maybe a little less seriously. But in invoking the names of these great beings in our mind, they help us to be accountable as we practice in the presence of their great qualities that we bring forth and give aliveness to in our minds. We rejoice in their virtues. We recite their names, which is an ancient way of invoking, of making real. We see their images. We bow to their images. We offer incense. What is all of that about? It's not for them. When Dada Roshi said, we need to learn how to bow, he was talking about much more than just bowing. Or rather, he was talking about everything that bowing is. In a world that is desperately in need of reverence and respect and sacredness, there is no lack of any of these things in the world, but in our minds, in our lives, they can be all too lacking. And the world shows the results of that. And in a sense, when we invoke their names and bring their presence into our presence, we're also asking for the teachings. We're asking that they offer their wisdom. Because hearing the name or seeing the image is not enough. We need to hear the teachings, receive them, practice them. We need to be students. Wouldn't that be a wonderful way? Isn't that a wonderful way to enter into a new year of life as a student? A student of the way, of all things. And then we chant the four vows, which brings all of everything together. All of the Buddha Dharma, all of our aspirations, all of our struggles, to alleviate the suffering of every being means we have to alleviate our own suffering. It means, as Dada Roshi used to often say, we need to be ready to have our own suffering alleviated by other beings. And we might think that, you know, we've been ready for a long time to give up the ways that create hindrance and obstruction. But anyone who practices sees it's much more complicated than that. As Shanti Deva said, I want to be at peace, I want happiness, but I continually run after the causes of my unhappiness. Dogen said, the human mind is hard to change, but its whole nature is change. To gain freedom from the illusion of our desires, our unhealthy desires, our over-expectant desires, so that we can have, as the Buddha said, a few good ones. Have a few good ones and know how to hold them. We vow to see the wisdom teachings in every time and place, to see the Buddha in every person, to see the Dharma in every situation. We need Buddhas and Bodhisattvas. We need enlightened beings in our lives. We need them to be living, and we need them to have lived. We need to have people in our lives who have given themselves deeply to practicing and realizing the Dharma, who have given themselves in service to us. We need that there be people who have dedicated their lives to selflessness and who have had the good fortune and the good karma to have found the ability to do that. And our tradition is filled with people, such people. Going back to the Buddha, we also need the lotus in the fire. We need everyday, ordinary practitioners like us who are at our own point along the way, beginning, middling, finding our legs, finding our voice, finding our confidence, practicing within our lives, within monasteries and Dharma centers, at home, in offices and schoolrooms, on construction sites and boardrooms. In other words, we need everyone. We need all hands on deck, basically. We need everyone to be living their lives responsibly, which sounds like something, you know, you'd hear in a public service announcement or something. But what does that actually mean, to live our lives responsibly? Well, we've gotten a chance to see what it is to not do that. We've had quite a few years of of that. Living responsibly is the most natural thing, and it's also not so easy. But it's also not that hard. Actually, it's not that hard. You just have to give a shit, basically. Care. And let that caring become larger than it is now. And then larger still. Not caring is like a poison. It's like a virus. It's not sustainable. It eats itself alive. Dharma is like a virus burning chamber, like a poison alchemizing remedy. It transforms the poison, the not caring, the greed, the selfishness. And it's actually not that hard to do, really, when we really want to, because all of those great qualities that we invoke these enlightened beings to embody, to provide us with examples, is closer than you think. It's in everyone, but it's not in another. It's in you, it's in me, it's in each of us. And so we take refuge. We raise Bodhi mind again and again and again and again, every day, every day, every day. If we want to practice, we have to practice every day. How you practice every day, that's your practice. That doesn't just mean one thing. But we need to be practicing every day, because otherwise, what is happening? The days that practice, in a sense, is the days where we care, where we put our butts on the line and say, this day matters. I don't want this one to get away squandered. I don't want to miss another opportunity. I might die before the day is over. And so we raise Bodhi mind. We penetrate the sutras. We study, we study, we study. We examine. This is a practice of great relaxation, profound relaxation beyond our imagination. But it's also a lot of work. But you know, people work their heads off. Enough of the bad language. We're starting a new year. People work like crazy people. You, me, us. We have worked like crazy people for things that we wanted, for things that were important to us, and sometimes things that weren't actually that important. This is not unknown to us. And we take refuge by leading the people, letting harmony pervade everywhere by our own uncontrived, unselfconscious, selfless actions. And so to let these aspirations permeate the vows that we make tonight, so we will, as we finish up with our fasatsu, we will then sit together into the new year, and then Hojin Sensei will bring in the new year with 108 strikes on the large case. 108 is infinite. And then we'll stand and begin a service, the New Year's service. We'll do a food offering to the Buddha. We'll chant the Heart Sutra and then go directly from that into the Metta, Karaniya Metta Sutta, to begin the year both in wisdom and compassion, and loving kindness. And while we're chanting the Metta Sutta, that's a time where those of us who are here in the Zendo will come up to the altar and offer an incense for the year and to make a vow, offer incense for your vow. And those of you at home, please offer incense. If you don't have an altar, then offer it in your mind. The important thing is the vow. And so to really reflect on what is uppermost in your mind, uppermost in importance of what you, each of us, needs to really be focusing on. Not as the only thing, but as it comes to you, the thing that you really want to keep in your mind, in your awareness, keep returning to again and again, that which will strengthen your practice and also make this year good. So to make a vow is to give birth to a living thing. You know, we don't just make a vow on New Year's Eve and then put it on the shelf and go about as usual. That's not a vow. A vow is a living thing. You do it every day. What makes practice change the course of things is coming back to it over and over and over and over. It becomes the warp and woof of your life. It's the whole fabric. And it includes everything. So that we can realize mind, all beings, all things are one essence, one nature. We are not far apart. We can make so much of our differences, and in that, we become toxic to each other and to ourselves. And it's an illusion. And so we practice to realize mind, all beings are one essence, and to awaken the heart so that no one and nothing is forsaken. Nothing gets left out. Dogen says, there is one more thing. I love that line. There's one more matter I must not neglect, but I need not bother now. As I listen to the sound of the evening rain falling on the roof of my mountain retreat, there is this moment, this night, this vow, that calls to us, that demands our attention, that invites us in. And there is one more thing. What is that? One more matter I must not neglect. I want to finish with a part of a dedication by Shantideva. But first, I want to express appreciation to my teacher, Dada Roshi, who gave birth to this monastery 40 years ago, gave birth painfully to me. Still happening, years ago, in our 40th anniversary of celebrating 40 years on this mountain. I want to express my deep gratitude to him, unending gratitude to him. I want to express my appreciation to Hojin Sensei and Hogen Sensei and to the monastics, a fine group of mad beings to choose such a life as this. To the residents who have been so steady and sincere, those of us who have been around for a while have, and I shouldn't even say it, but have commented on how if we had been in these last 9 months with other groups that we've had in the past. Not to malign anyone who is here. But it has been such a steady and warm and loving and vigorous group of residents, and that has made all the difference. And to you, those of you who have been practicing together with us, that has made all the difference too. I was thinking about what would this have been like, even though we've had such a distance and only seen each other on the screen, if that hadn't been so, right? If this had happened 25 years ago, it would have been a very different experience. And so I know, you know, we've heard from many of you who have talked about how helpful it has been for us to be here and practicing every day, but it goes both ways. So to Shantideva, may the naked now be clothed, and all the hungry eat their fill, and may those parched with thirst receive pure waters and delicious drink. May the poor and destitute find wealth, the haggard and the careworn joy. May those now in despair be whole in mind, endowed with sterling constancy. May every being ailing with disease be freed at once from every malady. May every sickness that afflicts the living be wholly and forever absent from the world. May those who go in dread have no more fear. May captives be unchained and now set free. And may the weak receive their strength. May living beings help each other in kindness. So simple. May living beings help each other in kindness.
Thanks for listening. Did you know that Zen Mountain Monastery is live streaming all Dharma talks and daily Zazen during the coronavirus quarantine? Visit our website to learn about all the online programs being offered at this time. Just go to zmm.org and click on the link at the very top of the page, or scroll down and click on Retreats.